This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saligny Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Always great to be with my pals. Let's hear a call from last night. This is where it all ended. Against the Brewers.
And there's a high fly ball right field. Moving over, Walker's there. He makes the catch for a Redbird winner. Light up the night in downtown St. Louis. As the Cardinals have won the first game in the series with Milwaukee by a final of 6-3.
They just take another series opener with Chris Ronji and Bernie Miklas. I'm Tom Ackerman. Look who's with us. Those of you watching on YouTube, X, and Facebook, expecting manager Ollie Marmol. He will be with us. Ollie is attending to some business and has brought in a sub who is going to get all the questions. He told me, ask you all the tough questions so he gets the easy ones later. Does that sound like a plan, Dusty Blake? Cardinals pitching coach Dusty Blake is
with us. Absolutely.
joining us from what looks like an outdoor cafe. Do we have a new sponsor we should bring in here for the Gas House game?
I try to mix it up a little bit. I don't know if we're ready to commit to a sponsor, but it's been a good spot so far. You have to have, obviously, some quality coffee offerings, and then we've also got to make sure that the Wi-Fi is good here to make sure we can dig in on the video and any of the stuff from the night before. So far, so good with this spot.
You got it all. Great spot. Let me start with this. What a season this has been. And let me ask you, from a pitching standpoint, navigating not only this rotation, but bullpen, and I guess it starts with Kyle Lahey. Kyle Lahey, a sneaky good start is how I described it this morning on the air. He got through his 5 1/3, and the Cardinals won the ballgame.
Yeah, I feel like Kyle's continuing to evolve, and that's what we want to see. We just want to see continued progress. You know, there's a lot of areas you have to be pretty good at this level in order to be successful. But for him, we've seen his velocity hold through the game a little bit more and a little bit deeper these last couple starts. We've seen him get to the sixth pretty efficiently in Pittsburgh, and then again last night. So that's a big part of the continued growth for him. We've got a couple things, obviously, we've got to continue to evolve with. But, yeah, it was good to see him go out there and give us a good look.
Hey, Dusty, Bernie, how are you, man? Good to see you again.
Hey, great. Yeah, enjoyed being on here. Appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, listen, I want to, you know, positive development. I just want to bring to everyone's attention. You know, you go back 16 games, that's April 18th. Your starting pitching ERA is 3.65. It's tied for eighth best in the majors. Six quality starts, also tied for eighth best. Now, I'm so glad you're on today, because there's something that fascinates me about this. That's a terrific ERA. Now, other people that are deeply into the metrics would look at it and say, oh, there's a lot of underlying stuff that tells you trouble, trouble, trouble. And so what are your thoughts on that sort of tug of war between ERA and metrics and underlying stuff? And is it ever a case where a guy just knows how to pitch, even though he may not have the best metric?
Yeah, I mean, that can absolutely be a successful model for some pitchers. You know, the biggest thing is we've got to lean into what they're great at. We've got to continue to help them do smaller things that give them a chance to control maybe more of their outcomes over time based on their strategy. But, yeah, there's clear analytic, implicit, you know, however you want to say it, strategy. And if the guys don't put the ball in play and you punch them out, it's a lot easier to keep the bases clean than if you have to rely on ball and play. I think what our org and some of our guys have done really well, and this is definitely you hear maybe more 10, 15 years ago than you hear now, but they're letting the defense play a little bit. I think we had 7 double plays that we were able to turn on Saturday and Sunday combined. And, you know, when you are on the ground a lot, that is one of the benefits. Like, yeah, sometimes – you know, on average, you know, 7 out of 10 of those ground balls are going to be outs. But if one gets through and you can manage the running game, which is also something, you know, if you're going to be a savvy pitcher on the mound, like we can't give away anything from the running game standpoint. But if we control that, then we're going to keep that guy at first base. And when the next one is at somebody, we've got a chance to get 2 outs now. So there are some things like that that can still be beneficial We do want to continue to do both. So if you think about, there is this, the debate, more analytical, go out there and compete. Which one do we want? Like, we want both. Do you want a healthy brain or a healthy heart? Well, we want both. So we want to continue to evolve from a stuff standpoint, from a velocity standpoint. But we can't discount the execution, and we can't discount the things that really give our guys a chance right now to be successful. And sometimes, based on the skill set and the capacity, it may be, you know, attacking those weak contact areas a little bit more than chasing the punch out.
Pallante will start tonight. And, you know, in the last couple of starts, he's gotten into the sixth inning. He got into the sixth is against the Mariners, and then finished six his last time against Pittsburgh. But for the starting staff as a one big unit, are you comfortable with the amount of innings they've thrown, knowing that around baseball, it's not really uncommon for starters to not be going as deep as they used to?
Yeah, I would say I'm comfortable right now. I think when you look at what they've done and the direction we're trying to go, like, we want them to be able to get us deeper into games. We don't necessarily – we're not in a spot where we're asking them to go seven or eight innings right now. But, you know, in order to sustain this workload threshold that we're trying to get to that's beneficial for starters, we absolutely have to push them to that threshold and help them adapt to that. And this is a good time of year to be able to do that for them. So I think we're somewhere in the top half, maybe as far as rotation innings right now in the league. And that's obviously, I don't want to say improved, but maintained or improved slightly in these last couple of starts where all these guys have been able to get us into the six or through the six.
Pitching coach Dusty Blake is with us. Ollie Marmol, Cardinals manager, will be with us in just a bit here on the Gas House Gang. But just a couple more pitching questions for you before we get to the skipper. Ryan Stanek, a scoreless frame yesterday. Is he starting to settle in a little bit to his role? Are you seeing improvement out of him?
Yeah, I think it's always tough for anybody. And we want to get the best out of these guys. You know, a big part of our foundation is best version of you. So that will always be the goal. We don't want to make bad luck or excuses as part of our strategy. He does have one of the highest BABIPs in the league right now, which means when he has done a good job attacking guys or trying to force weak contact early, a lot of those have just kind of found holes way above the normal over the course of a season. Generally, guys with much less stuff than him are not going to have a bat at that high. So we do expect that over time to clean up a little bit just by default. So some of the randomness of starting your season with a new team, having an inning or two where, the strike zone did get away from him, but then when he has attacked guys for a lot of those balls to find holes, I think it's just something that it is hard to work through early, but I'm encouraged with his aggression in the zone, which is what we saw again last night. And that's just something we got to continue to build on for sure. That's his best bet.
Dusty Blake, Cardinals pitching coach, with us. Let's bring in Cardinals manager Oliver Marmol, who joins us on the Gas House Gang. Ollie, thank you very much. We're having a good time with the pitching coach. I'll tell you what, everything's kind of a good time right now when you're winning. I mean, there's a good vibe around this club right now, and really has been from the get-go.
No doubt. I was hoping to bring Dusty on and let you guys absolutely drill him. So make sure
we're working on it.
Yeah, no, give him the real tough ones.
Yeah, we're doing the best we can. But just to kind of get back to what happened last night, Ollie, overall, this team continues to come out of the gates hot. They put it on early, a bases-clearing double by Ivan Herrera to get yourself rolling in the fourth inning. There's a good vibe once again around this team, but taking big time at bats.
No doubt. The guys are doing a really nice job, and I've said it a ton of times, man. It's just a matter of continuing to take tough at bats and not giving anything away. I feel like 1-9, they've done a nice job of that. Even when you look at that last game against LA, I feel like we struck the ball extremely well. Unlucky as far as kind of some of those hits not falling, but as far as how we came out, our approach, our swings, it was in a really good spot. Actually, one of our better games, if you ask me. So I like what we're doing, regardless of if we're winning or losing. It's been pretty good.
Ollie, Bernie, good to be with you again, as always. Listen, I want to ask you this, and I know that you all have had a plan, a very specific plan about how you're going to take your at bats, how you're going to, your hitting philosophy, your foundation, whatever you will. And it seems to me everything you said that you want to do, I won't bore you, and I'm sorry for the long question, but I went through all kinds of stuff yesterday, and all the things that you kind of earmarked that, hey, this is what we have to do. You're doing it. I mean, you're doing it. You're checking all the boxes. So my question is simply this. I mean, how gratified are you and the coaches, front office, that the players not only are buying in, but they're implementing the plan as well as they are?
It's exciting because you don't know when it's going to take, how it's going to take. The buy-in has been there from the very beginning, but it's cool to see these guys, man, they're making some really good strides. And when you talk about every single guy buying into what this needs to look like, truly understanding who they are and what they bring to the table and not trying to operate outside of that, that's not the easiest thing to do, but I feel like we're in a really good spot with that. But there's still a lot of work to be done, man. It's one thing to say, hey, we're making progress, things are looking good right now, but there's a lot of areas where there's still work to be done. And it was really good yesterday to see Victor Scott. Like, he's a big part of when he gets on base, man, it's almost a guaranteed run. And seeing him do what he did yesterday is very important. And I alluded to this in the post game, man. This is a guy, his work ethic is through the roof. His attention to detail is incredible. And when I'm at the stadium and there's just a couple guys left as far as coaches, and you hear someone swinging in the cage at 11:45 at night, man, that's a big deal. And it shows you, like, he's not going to give in to what's going on right now. He's going to continue to work. And that's the type of mentality and type of players you want. So I give him a lot of credit. And my hope is that it starts to take and we can see more consistency. But to answer your question, man, it is gratifying to see these guys coming along and continuing to develop.
The results are there. The wins are happening and things are going well. You said there's stuff that still needs work. What are the kinds of things that you identify where the work needs to be done?
No, it's a good question. And I tend not to go into detail because then that's all we'll have to answer to all day today from media. It's kind of like, all right, well then let's poke around at these areas. It's just, we're not going to settle and think this is the best version of ourselves. It's not. I think we're making great progress. But in order for us to get to what we're wanting to, as far as like big picture, when I said this during the offseason, you show up knowing you're expecting to win, you're knowing you're going to beat somebody rather than just hoping it goes well. There's still work to be done there, but I like the momentum and I like the direction it's headed.
Want to ask Dusty Blake, as we bring the pitching coach back in, his evaluation of the catching position. And I mentioned Herrera from a hitting standpoint, but what about how Ivan has taken on that? And while you're answering that, Pedro Páez, who stumbled a little, let's be honest. I mean, it defensively wasn't himself, it didn't seem like, out of the gate. But boy, has he come around on both sides of the plate, both sides of the ball.
And both those guys, a big part of why, you know, these last – whatever, 7 to 10 days have been pretty good for our staff. Ivan specifically, I haven't seen anybody work harder than him as far as his commitment to being a guy behind the plate that can keep our pitchers in a good spot, that can keep and control the game. So can't be more proud of the time he's invested into that part of the game. His instincts behind the plate have always been pretty solid. But he's continued to grow and evolve there with his time and commitment in that area. And then, Petey, again, like you just said, has been really, really, really solid these last couple weeks and always has a good game plan. Our guys trust him, does a really good job reading the game in the moment and making some potential off-strip adjustments as a byproduct of that that tend to go our way just due to, again, his work ethic and time and savvy behind the plate. So, yeah, really proud of what both of those guys are doing so far.
Dusty, it's been tough with the bullpen. It's been a challenge for you guys, and including the relievers. It looks like they're making progress, though, and they're trying to get around the corner. And in your mind, what do you need to do to get around that corner? Because I think you're getting closer, especially with some help provided by some of the newer guys.
Yeah, we're chipping away. You know, when you look at you know, where we're at coming into the season, the workload that these guys have had at this level. There obviously wasn't a ton of experience out there, and with some of the guys that did have experience, there were some things that we would want to improve on and do a little better. So that's always a work in progress. I honestly felt like the spring went so well for most of them. It was really hard to dig in on some of these areas, but as the, you know, the game and the season presented itself, having a chance to work through some of that now, it has been continued growth for these guys. I do like their passion for open-mindedness, not being rigid, learning from what the game tells us. And then, you know, what's hard for these guys a lot of time at this level when you've got, you know, 40,000 plus, depending on the game situation, is like to accept where they're at, not that they need to stay there. But it's to say, like, I know I want to be a guy that can be this person for this staff and for this team, but right now this is where I at, where I'm at. And if I can accept that, then I can really make some positive steps forward, knowing that this is where I want to be. It doesn't mean I need to settle. It just means that we've got to have some really good self-awareness and understanding of, like, this is what the game's telling me right now. And if I want to get to this point where this team can consistently rely on me and lean on me in big spots or in my lane as a bullpen reliever, like, this is what I need to be prepared to do. And as we get closer to that, I'm optimistic that we can see some of that consistency play out.
Great to get insight from Cardinals pitching coach Dusty Blake. Dusty, thanks so much for doing this. We appreciate you. Have a great game tonight against the Brewers.
Awesome. Yeah, appreciate you guys having me on.
We will take a quick break. We'll come back with more from manager Ollie Marmol. It is the Gas House Gang on KMOX, and we will be back right after this.
Now, All Access with Cardinals manager Ollie Marmol. Sponsored by Window World. Simply the best for less. Siteman Cancer Center. National leaders in cancer. And by Circa Sports. Circa Sports. Sports betting the way it should be. On the voice of the Cardinals, KMOX.
We are back on the Gas House Gang. Cardinals won another series opener. The Brewers last night, 6-3. They are 21-14. They're two games out of the NL Central, second place all to themselves. Manager Ollie Marmol is with us. Bernie Miklas, Chris Ronji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Ronji, why don't you lead us off this round?
Ollie, I know that we heard a couple of days ago that Lars Nootbaar is making his return back. He's going to do the rehab assignment. Yeah. And the hope is, you know, end of this month, maybe beginning of next, that he returns to the lineup. Do you already have an idea in mind how you want to handle his return to the lineup and where he is on the field, or will you be taking the next couple of weeks to make that decision?
Yeah, he's yet to play in a game. And he's going to have a similar to a spring training type of ramp up in order to make his way back to us. And we feel good about using him the way he needs to be used once he's on the roster. So there's still a decent amount of time to make those decisions, and a lot could happen between now and that day. So we'll continue to evaluate what we currently have and how it's going. And once he gets a week or so out, then we'll be closer to making a decision as to what that needs to look like. But today, I'm just glad that we're making progress on the rehab front and that we're getting closer to that week of the 10th or so when he can start playing in some games and showing what where he's at.
Ollie, your 1-4 lineup spots are just doing great. It's among the, you know, top 3 or 4 in baseball if you look at all the 1-4 spots. But once you get past, you know, JJ and Herrera and Burleson and Walker, I'm not saying the guys behind them are bad. I'm just saying that's a powerhouse group right there. How is the rest of it behind them shaping up? How is that flowing? What is your hope for the other spots that follow the big four?
Yeah, it's a good question. This is why I mentioned Scott earlier, because he's so good defensively that having him in the 9 spot, getting him on base, drawing walks, being able to kind of spray the ball is important for the top of the lineup. Mason, what he did yesterday and being able to shoot the ball to right field, he'll pick his spots, want to go pull side because he does that well with the ball coming into him, it is also a big part of this. And I think we're on the right track with Mason, and we're seeing some production there. Churchy's done a nice job, man. Like, even you look at his outs, they've been impressive as far as like how he's staying through the ball, through the middle of the field. And I like what he's able to do, man. He's got enough pop to surprise you and go pull side for doubles and homers. But he's done a really nice job offensively. Defensively, he's great out there. It's nice to have two center fielders and be able to put one in the corner. But yeah, I think when you look at Páez, and we talked about this last week, when he's in the lineup behind the plate, like offensively, you look at catchers across the league, man, he's doing a really nice job on both sides of it. So it is shaping up where I agree the top of the lineups, there's some high production there, but the rest of the lineup's doing a really nice job of carrying their weight and figuring out ways to create opportunities so the top can do what they've been doing, and that's driving in runs. But you look at a game like yesterday, man, Milwaukee's a good team. And we put a lot of pressure on them. We continue to create opportunities to score. I believe we had a runner in scoring position every inning but one. And when you do that, man, you're on the other side of that. That wears you out. It's tough when every inning is a stress inning. So I'm proud of our group for the way they're handling that.
Just a real quick follow-up. What are you seeing with Gorman? I know he would want his numbers to be better, but it does seem like he's taking better ABs.
He is, and this is the like ups and downs of someone like him. When he's in a little bit of a rut, man, it may look like really bad. But you have to kind of take a step back and start to evaluate just bigger picture. And I do feel like we're on a better track right now. His at bats do look better. You look at some of the left on lefts that we let him have over the last week or so, and he's staying on the ball a lot better. So I'm optimistic as to where that's headed at the moment. I liked even that line drive he hit the center field yesterday, man. Like those are the type of at-bats he needs to have where he's staying through the baseball. And then if they make a mistake closer to him, then that's when it goes a long ways.
Where do you see Sejesi right now? That move was made to get Prieto in there.
Yeah, this is one of those where you have an opportunity and you take a step back and you go, what's best for Sejesi, right? Is it to be up here playing once or twice a week? We're facing a lot of righties. There's not a lane for a lefty. Like we've just not seen many lefties over the last couple of weeks. And when you look at who we're about to face, there's not a lot of them there either. And you're weighing the go down for a couple of weeks, get some at bats. And the one thing he's been needing to work on is just pitch recognition, just controlling the strike zone. That's tough to do off the bench as a young player. So sometimes we may be forced where he needs to be up here and he needs to sit and play twice a week based on need. But ideally, he's down there working on that exact skill. Yeah.
There's a question here from a listener, Robert, who is watching on Facebook, and he's asking about, implementing hit and run strategies and wondering if, and I believe he's asking if analytics are suggesting that it's not a good idea to go that direction. How do you see hitting plays like that?
Man, so this is where it'll indicate it's not a very successful play, right? Like, and someone may chirp on here and say, well, back in the day, we used to hit and run a ton, and Albert would hit and run, and Yadi would. Yes, that you're absolutely right. You have two guys that have high contact skills, that have great hit ability, that can see the ball deep, hit it the other way, put a guy in motion when they weren't feeling good. It was a way to operate to get them back on track. I believe in all of that, to be quite honest with you. But from the purpose of a hit and run is to stay out of the double play and get the guy from first to third. It doesn't happen as often as you would think when that play is ran. So there's a time for it. There's a specific combo of guys that can do it, whether guy on first and guy at the plate. But for the most part, you see less and less of it across the league because of that.
Ollie, what do you think? I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this. I apologize for delaying. The Cardinals have had this amazing ability where, you know, things are looking really bad. You kind of hit the skids for a while, but that's just happened twice. And then you immediately bounce back and go on another run. I mean, you want to attribute that to intangibles and the team character and all that stuff, but it's just uncanny the way they do it over and over again, within a game, within the same week, within a stretch of schedule. Where does that resilience come from?
Man, I listened to Burleson do an interview post game the other day, and he stopped himself because he didn't want to come across as flippant or if he didn't care, but he stopped himself and he said, I'll just say it, like, we just don't care. And what he means by that is not that they don't care about the game, they don't care about winning, they truly do. I mean, if any, like, these dudes really, really care. But what he means by that is like, what just happened doesn't matter. Like, what's about to happen is the most important thing. So like, whether we won last night and beat somebody badly, or we gave up a game, like, that no longer matters. And we've been trying to drill this into this group because we understand the type of season it can be. It could be a season that has some real ups and downs, right? But if you have the mentality of like, hey, we did really well last night, and that doesn't matter because we have to take care of business today. And if we lost last night, it doesn't matter because we have to take care of business today. Like, they've really rallied around that. So if you hear any of these guys say like, man, we just don't care. Like, it's not that they don't care about the things that are important. They care a ton about winning, and they care a ton about this city and bringing a good game daily to the people that are showing up and watching us. We're not going to be bogged down by the noise of what we're supposed to be, or the expectations, or the ups and downs that come with playing 162. Like, what's important is what's in front of us today. And we're going to play like crazy to make sure we take care of business today. So I love where we're at mentally, but I attribute their ability to bounce back to that. They've done a really nice job with that.
And last thing, Ollie, how does that apply to relievers? Because as we all know, you got to have a short memory if you're a reliever. You got to bounce right back. Do they have that same mentality too? And I kind of feel like you're letting them get out of trouble, or you're just, you know, you're not going to rescue them every day. You want them to fight their way through it.
At times, yes. Mm-hmm. And that's, the reliever game is a tough one, man, because you feel like the weight of that game is on you when it doesn't go your way. And it's so hard to shake that off. Like, I'll tell you, when I make a decision that I feel like is the wrong decision, and I'm sitting at my house and it's midnight, 1 o'clock, and I'm still thinking about it, man, it weighs on you because you feel like you had an opportunity to change the game and you didn't. And if anything, you hurt the team from doing that. And it's hard to shake that off and show up the next day as if nothing happened, but you better be really damn good at that. Or you'll spiral. So it's a combination of things. In spring training, we talked about like, no one goes through the season alone. Like, when something doesn't go your way, like, we're going to be observant and see who's kind of going into their own little corners and get them out of there as quickly as possible, because it's going to take everybody. And our relievers they've had their ups and downs, and we've seen it where guys give it up and they feel terrible about it. But those guys in that clubhouse continue to pick each other up, and it's cool to watch. They're learning how to do that at a high level. And the better we get at that, the better we're going to be as a team. So again, I credit that clubhouse for where it's at.
Congrats on the win last night. Good appreciate luck it, tonight against the Brewers. Thank you for spending time with us as always. We appreciate it.
No, absolutely. Appreciate you guys.
Also, Mitchell, listener, yeah. Mitchell has a request for you. He would like for you to go argue about something random so you can get ejected because he misses it. He misses your ejections.
Yeah. Mitchell, I hear you. I've gotten this question a couple times now, and I just can't find anything to yell about these days. The ABS has saved me a ton of money.
I was going to say.
Bernie's shaking his head.
Hey, man, since we're making requests, here's mine. Yeah, all right. Yeah. It was that famous showdown at Wrigley Field. I was covering the game. Dusty Baker and Tony La Russa just screaming at each other across the field, right?
There you go.
Start some stuff with Pat Murphy tonight. Like, yes. Like, get after him.
Yes.
I want to see you and Murphy go at it.
Oh, that's beautiful. I'll pick my, Mitchell, I'll pick my spot, man. I'll pick my spot, but I owe you one. I got you.
All right.
Thanks for the time, Ollie. Great to be
with
you.
Take care, guys.
Bernie Miklas on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bagel Loan, and by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
Back on the Gas House Gang with Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Bernie Miklas with us every Tuesday and Thursday. Ollie Marmol was with us today. Dusty Blake was with us today. Boy, we had a lot of information, a lot of good stuff in that first portion of the show. Bernie, this is something that I asked you on Sunday, but every day that goes by now, I'm going to start thinking about it more, and that is, if the Cardinals win, if the Cardinals are in contention around the trade deadline, what is their approach? I can't imagine them moving away from their plan, but could it be a situation where they make a sneaky little move and add a pitcher and try to take a shot at this?
I got to believe Heim Bloom will entertain all kinds of possibilities and reject anything that requires him to give up a prospect or two that they really like. But You know, that said, if you review past trade deadlines recent years, I mean, you can pick up a sort of a back towards the back end of the rotation starter without giving up the house. You can certainly pick up a reliever that can be useful and maybe fill a specific need where you're not doing anything that's going to sting you too much. I mean, look at Heimblum when he sensed that they had a weakness in their bullpen going into the year. Look at how he went out and got George Soriano. And with all due respect to Andre Granillo, giving him up really made no difference whatsoever because they really believed Soriano could be very good and they knew how to make him better. You're not just getting Heimblum, you're getting his whole network. And that network identifies guys in advance that may be under the radar guys that they believe can make the Cardinals better. I'm talking about pitchers in this instance. And so they'll make the if they make a move or two, it might be kind of a so what reaction, but there's a reason why they make these moves. But they are not going to mess with the future. But I don't think they have to.
You know, we talked to Derek Gould on the Chris and Amy show earlier about this, and he mentioned something when we had this exact same conversation. They keep winning. We get closer to July. Maybe you start thinking about what you want to do here. If they're a game out, two games out, or in a wild card spot, you know, what do you do about that? And my thought process is, you know, whatever their plan is, stick to it and stick to it closely and don't let a good start fool you. Kind of like, you know, like last year. I mean, they didn't get off to a great start in April, but they were playing pretty well, you know, going into the deadline, had a good May. And I didn't want them to overextend themselves because we kind of knew what last year's team was. And it's the same thing for this year. And Derek said, you know, maybe sometimes, and I don't even know if that he was suggesting they actually do it or just putting it out there that, you know, maybe sometimes you reward a fan base, you reward a team with something. Like you tell them, hey, we're doing something at the deadline. Doesn't have to be picking up a starter. Doesn't have to be picking up a top of the line guy for the rotation or an impact bat, but it could be somebody that's help. That's a little bit of help for what you're doing. And you reward fans with that. You reward, you know, the lineup with that or the roster with that. You let them know, hey, you guys are playing pretty well. Here's what we're going to do for you. And maybe that is what they do. Maybe they do pick up a reliever at the deadline who can help out a little bit. But it's I can't imagine they overextend themselves in any way leading up to that, even if they are still winning.
Yeah, I did a video last week where I said the same thing in terms of, I don't know how Heimblum could not, if the way this team plays its heart out and as amazing as they are to watch and they're so entertaining, I can't believe that he would just leave things unattended. And I said, listen, I don't know how he would, in effect, turn his back on those players. And I don't think he will. You know, I mean, I just don't think he will. And so it sounds like Derek Gould and I are pretty much aligned on that. I fully expect him to make a move or two that'll truly help, but without being the big splash move that maybe some people want. That ain't going to happen.
Now back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling and by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
We get 5 solid minutes with Blues analyst Joey Vitale. Man, is it great to have him back on KMOX. As Al Michaels said in 1980, do you believe in miracles? Can they pull this off? The draft lottery is tonight at 6 o'clock on ESPN. Can they get numbers 1 or 2? A 3% chance to get either. Joey, it's always fun to think about those possibilities. How are you?
Hey, Tom, I'm doing really well. It's always an honor and privilege to be back on KMOX. It's where I cut my teeth into this business back in 2018-19. That was the final year with KMOX on the St. Louis Blues, and what a fun historic run of a year that was.
Joey, Bernie Miklas, man, great to talk to you. Really is. Hey, listen, man, this draft lottery, I got to ask you the most important question. What do you have for a good luck charm? What is your personal good luck charm that's going to get the Blues the highest possible pick they can get?
Hey, Bernie, how are you? You good, know, I don't believe in I don't believe in luck. I don't believe in superstitions. I don't believe in any of that junk. You know, I know people believe in the old rabbit foot. Whatever you're doing out there, if you believe in the voodoo dolls, I don't really care. But we could all use a little bit, as you mentioned there, Tom, too. It's the percentages are not in favor of St. Louis. It doesn't look great. But at the same time, there is still a chance. So, you know, I know everyone gets all hyped up about, you know, getting number one, getting number two, getting number three, and, you know, mid-10s, whatever it is. It's a first-rounder, still a first-rounder. When you get a first-rounder in this league, you're going to look at an elite hockey player. So I know that we can throw out plenty of examples of guys that have gone top three that have flopped. There's plenty of examples in our own Robert Thomas that have gone mid to late first round that have excelled. So really it is, to me, at the end of the day, it's still a coin toss. It's a roll of the dice. It's a pick out of a hat, however you want to say it, as far as these young kids and how they're eventually going to flourish and thrive. But the one thing I've always loved about St. Louis and what they've done here is the development from the guys they have picked. It's been exceptional. And you look at the names that have been brought up to the NHL and continue to excel at this league. It's phenomenal in their approach as far as what they do in the minors. Now Steve Ott has just got the Springfield Falcons rolling down there. So plenty of great names, plenty of great development coaches and scouts along the way. So whoever they end up picking, you know they're going to have a great shot of playing the NHL one day.
Joey, how do you think they should handle it? Whatever position they draft in, is it going by, hey, we need offense, or we need defense, or knowing that it's going to be some time probably that these guys they draft will make it to the NHL? Is it all about just as simple as best talent available? How do you see it?
Always best talent available, right? I mean, you're looking at these kids that they end up getting drafted, you know, here in July or end of June. You know, you're looking at 3, 4, 5 years before they even make a substantial impact for most of them. Now, the top three may be a little different, right? You know, you look at players like Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel back in 15, the 1-2 punch. I mean, they were ready to go the final year, and they were impactful within a year or two. You know, those are special caliber players. Most players are 5, 6 years. I mean, you know, the example I love the most is even Nathan MacKinnon, one of the greatest players in the world right now. Look at his numbers first 5, 6 years in the National Hockey League. They're not going to blow you away. So even a player like MacKinnon, you know, he's not putting up 80, 90, 100 points until his year is 4, 5, 6. Really, it takes you that long, even a high-end caliber talent like Nathan MacKinnon, to even develop into this league. So with all that being said, you're looking at a 5, 6 year runway at the very bare minimum before they're entering their prime and making a huge difference in the National Hockey League. So that's a long time. So it's hard to project what your team's going to need at that point. So you always end up taking the best player. You always take the best talent. You know, it's something that Alexander Steen, you know, believes in. And I know it's something we've talked to on the side, but it's really those intangibles and it's those things that the analytics can't really break down, or you don't see to the naked obvious eye. And the very top of it all is just the players compete, you know, the will to win a puck. You know, that was Steve Yzerman's whole process. You know, Darren Pang told me this years ago when he built the Tampa Bay Lightning. They went on to win multiple cups. And that was Steve Yzerman's team that he built. You know, all those young players, the Points and the Hagels and all those crazy guys. And when asked about what he looks for young players and when drafting, he said at the end of the day, there's a puck in the corner. Who's coming out of the corner with that puck? It's just that simple. I mean, that's the game of hockey. It's really not all that complicated. We tend to make it a little bit more complicated than it needs to be. Will, desire, compete. Those are all the things Steen's certainly going to be looking for with his staff here coming up here.
The other big news this week, Dylan Holloway, 5-year extension worth $38.75 million. Guy played only 59 games, still was second on the team with 22 goals. Big developments in the Blues organization. Draft lottery is tonight at 6 o'clock. We will see what happens. Joey, thank you for joining us for the final segment of the show. It's great to hear you.
Always great hearing from you boys as well, Tom. Take care. You guys have a great weekend.
Good to have Joey Vitale on the Gas House Gang. For Bernie Miklas, for Chris Ranji, I'm Tom Ackerman. Our thanks to Ollie Marmel and Dusty Blake with us on the show. Cards and Brewers tonight at 6:45, 5:50 for the pregame. For all of us at KMOX, we say have a wonderful Tuesday. The DGS is next.